So, good to be here. I've been coming to GMHC since I was in college, so that's getting over 20 years now. Great place to be. Just, you know, most medical missionaries I talk to have GMHC in their history, and you guys can come on in. And I'm going to give you a lecture. I will say most of what I'm going to say is probably more geared on what I've seen domestically than it is what I've seen internationally. I've been in both. I've done short-term work. I was a dentist in the Army for about 8 years. I worked in public health in Florida for about 7 years. Now I work at an FQHC. And a lot of this is, you know, working in public health, FQHC, a lot of my patients have already been to the emergency room before they get to me. And some of the things that I hear, again, I'm getting it secondhand, but just, you know, hearing what the patients get told, this is what I, you know, again, this is based on a lot of those patient interactions that I've had. So today, let's see here. Yeah, here we go. All right, so these are the things we're going to try to talk about today. Probably not going to have a lot of time to go over the local anesthesia about where and how to give anesthesia. There are slides. It'll all be here. If you want this, my email is at the end. You can email me. It's actually up on the somewhere port. I uploaded it last night, so the PDF version is online. Should be able to find it. But we're just going to go through just some things, just some basic things. I have some dental instruments here. Last time I did this, I think it was this same room 2 years ago, Saturday morning, and it snowed. So I cold tested a live. I'm not going to take the time to do that, but we'll do one on the mannequin teeth. So just the types of teeth. I would not recommend trying to memorize the American Dental Association numbering system 1 to 32, especially if you're a dentist. Yes, obviously you know that. But if you're not a dentist, I wouldn't worry about that numbering system. It's just confusing. The international system is good because all the canines, this is the system that we use in the U.S. I wouldn't recommend that. International system is based by quadrant, so you start in the upper right and you go clockwise, 1, 2, 3, 4. And the nice thing is all the canines are threes, all the molars are 6, 7, 8, all the premolars are 4 and 5, all the incisors are 1s or 2s. It's just a lot simpler system. And this is what I would recommend. If you're not dealing with teeth and counting teeth on a regular basis, use this system. A dentist in the U.S. will know, they'll be able to figure out what you're talking about. This is what they use internationally. So this is what I would recommend that you use. And you know, when we teach dentistry overseas, this is, you know, to lay people, this is what we're using. Just a lot simpler. Okay, so, you know, if you're medical people, you understand these terms, mesial distal, you know, you can use palatal or lingual. If it's technically the roof of the mouth, the upper jaw, you'd say the palate, the lower you'd say the lingual, but lingual is kind of the universal term. Facial is probably the universal term on the bottom, but you can say buccal as well. So, again, identifying teeth, okay, if it's, again, think about a slotted screwdriver, it's an incisor, it's got a flat edge, and that's what we're going to see, okay? And the canine, you know, I always tell the students, show me the mountains. How many mountains does it have, okay? Canine's the easiest to identify, it only has one cusp. It's also the least likely to be lost. Usually if you're pulling a canine, they probably lost a lot of other teeth at that point. It's got the longest root. And so find the canine, and that's what helps you know where you're at numbering-wise. Okay, sometimes people are missing teeth. You can't just start in the back and count forward. You got to have an idea what the teeth should look like. And so, again, important, you know, this is the easiest one to identify. It's the only tooth in the mouth that has one cusp. That's why I call it a cuspid. The more traditional names are actually better, the cuspid, because that's one cusp. Premolar or a bicuspid, again, the name tells you everything you need to know. Bicuspid, two cusps, okay? And so molars, you know, four cusps, gets a little confusing when you've got a mixed dentition, you've got baby teeth and adult teeth. We'll talk a little bit about that, but that's typically only 6 to 12 years old when you're dealing with both types of teeth at the same time. So just kind of showing you what's happening. You know, really all the teeth match except the baby molars get replaced by the adult premolars. And in God's design, the baby molar is wider than the premolar, and so there should be enough room. The challenge becomes if a child loses a baby molar early and we have shifting forward, then by the time the premolars come in, we can lose the space. We might have crowding issues. Now, in the U.S., typically orthodontics is going to be available. especially in the developing world context, not usually a realistic reality for most places. So baby teeth, you know, in the U.S. we use this A through T system. I wouldn't recommend that. The international system, again, same thing. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, and then we start counting again for the deciduous. We start 5, 6, 7, 8. That's how we number the quadrants for the deciduous teeth. A lot of foreign countries, they call them milk teeth. But again, this system is just a lot simpler. So if it's in the 4 or the 5 position and they're 6 to 12, we're going to count the cusps. That's going to tell us if it's a baby tooth or an adult tooth. If it's got 2 cusps, it's an adult tooth. If it's got 4 cusps, it's a baby tooth. So that's why this is where it can get confusing, the 4 and 5 position, because you have a tooth with 4 cusps. That's why you just need to know if they're between 6 to 12, we might have both types of teeth at the same time. This is your eruption chart. Don't need to memorize this. Good to have for reference. Kid comes in. Actually, the parent is usually more concerned than they need to be, but that's okay. Just kind of your, you know, probably your main thing. You know, usually 6 months you start seeing lower incisors, 6 to 9 months on a baby. Usually by 3 years we should have all of the baby teeth, and then by 6 we start seeing permanent teeth, and then by 12 we should have lost all the baby teeth in most instances. So kind of the threes, the increments of 3, and you've got your 3 years old, you expect all the baby teeth. 6, we start seeing permanent teeth. By 12, we should have all permanent teeth. And then 18, you know, the 18-year molar, that's the wisdom tooth. You know, if they're going to erupt, they usually erupt 18 or later. So the actual structure of the tooth, you know, this is, you know, the enamel, that's the outer portion of the tooth, the part that you can see. Should be, you know, as long as it's not compromised from decay, it's the hardest substance in the body. And, you know, that we'll talk more about this in our as we go through caries and caries diagnosis. But the dentin is underneath the enamel. You know, the enamel is not connected to the nerve tissue. We'll talk about this later, but they're not going to have any, there are no symptoms when decay is strictly limited to enamel. And so, you know, the nerve, that's where the blood supply and the nerve, the pulp chamber and the canal, that's where the nerve supply and the blood supply to the tooth are. So, and we'll talk about trauma. There is dental trauma, you'll see it, but not nearly as common as I would have expected. Spent a year in Afghanistan with the Army, really didn't see a lot of dental trauma. So there are the American Academy and the Donis, they have these yellow papers, I could send them to you. These definitely aren't things you need to memorize. But we'll go over, you know, if you have a tooth that's avulsed, you need to get that tooth back in as soon as possible. Don't wait. The sooner you get that back, you know, if it's a baby tooth, we're not going to replant it. If it's an adult tooth, ideally that tooth gets back in the mouth within 30 minutes, especially an hour. Once it's beyond that, it's just the likelihood of it surviving goes down. And so don't wait. Get the tooth back in as soon as you can. If there's debris on the root surface, just rinse it off with saline if you have it, but don't scrub that root surface. That's the PDL cells are on that root surface. Just get that tooth back in as fast as you can. And, you know, put it back in, have them bite on gauze, and then, you know, I'm not expecting medical people to splint teeth, but get them to a dentist eventually. But that's the main thing, is getting it back in the mouth. Don't wait. If you don't have a dentist, don't wait for that. So these are the Ellis classifications. I'm always impressed. Dentists don't talk about this system, but I'm amazed. I see physicians that can tell you all that. I was like, oh, this is really impressive. They know all the Ellis classification. Okay, LS1, that's strictly enamel. There will not be any symptoms. This is not an emergency. You know, sometimes the patient's really concerned. Okay, LS2, we have some dentin that's exposed. It might be sensitive when they suck in cold air. Again, that's not an emergency. Okay, it might be sensitive to cold, but not an emergency. LS3, we do have the pulp is exposed. That needs to be dealt with. Okay, so that's something, you know, that needs to be referred. You know, either going to extract or we're going to do root canal therapy. But, you know, not something, you know, again, yeah, nice thing. You know, if you're not a dental person, you know, 1 and 2 really aren't an emergency. Just go ahead. Yes. No, that was referring to an avulsion. If the tooth comes completely out, you're going to put the tooth back in as soon as you can. This is a tooth that's intact. It's in the mouth. It's just been fractured from trauma.
drying out? Or?
I'm talking about a tooth that was completely taken out of the socket from trauma. We want to keep the tooth, so we're putting it back in we're trying to keep the tooth in the mouth. Is that... Well, you're just wasting time. You're decreasing the likelihood of it succeeding in successful re-implantation.
I guess I'll have to see why. What is it about putting it back in the...
Well, eventually, it needs to go back in the mouth.
Right.
Right, so we want to get it in as fast as we can. We don't... There's no need to soak it in solution. You need to put it back in.
What are those cells that are attached to that root?
The periodontal ligament cells... Well, you if there's debris, you're just going to lightly rinse it. You're not going to scrub it. Correct. And that's why the time is important. You don't need to soak it in solution. You need to put it back in. You're just losing time if you wait to reimplant it. Yeah. Well, this at most is going to be sensitive to cold or sweet, but this is not going to be painful. It's sensitive. So if we've got an exposed pulp, it could be in pain. We'll talk more about that. Okay, so this is more on the perio side. This is not typically going to show up as an emergency. This is just for knowledge. Periodontal disease, very, very rare. It's kind of the slow, silent killer. Very rarely is going to cause an emergency. Okay, and so we have healthy teeth, healthy gums. We're going to have pink gingiva. Shouldn't bleed when you brush or floss. When we have gingivitis, then we're going to have red inflamed tissue. Nice thing is about gingivitis, once we get that plaque and the tartar off the teeth, in 2 weeks, we're going to have healthy tissue again. And unfortunately, with periodontal disease, once we get here, we've got calculus on the teeth, and the bacteria is causing inflammation of the bone, and we're losing supporting bone. This isn't painful, but challenge with periodontal disease is it's really hard to get that bone back. You mainly just manage periodontal disease, keep it from getting worse. There are some periodontal procedures, but they're just more complicated, more expensive. And so periodontal disease is just something that you manage. You try to minimize, try to prevent it. And once it happens, you try to, keep the area cleansable so it doesn't get worse. No, not typically. I mean, there are aggressive periodontitis, and they keep changing the terminology, but aggressive periodontitis, some used to call it juvenile periodontitis. You see that sometimes on first molars. But thankfully, with children, not typically seeing periodontal disease. Usually takes time. So, part of, the educating the patient is a lot of patients want to come in and they want to blame their genetics for why they have decay, okay? And decay is not genetic. Okay, decay is all environmental. Okay, it takes three things. We'll talk about this: bacteria, sugar, and time. And this is actually, a very good gospel introduction here. We got sins of omission and sins of commission, right? We have the things that we know we should do. We know we should brush our teeth. I grew up in a Lutheran church. We have sinned against thee in thought, word, and deed, of what we have done and what we have left undone. Those are the sins of omission. We also know the sins of commission, all that junk we know we should not eat. We do that, okay? And my friend says the unholy trinity, bacteria, sugar, and time. That's what causes caries, okay? And so, it's funny. I worked in public health. Patient comes in with their 44-ounce gas station soda, and then they're blaming their grandparents. It's like, well, your grandparents didn't leave all that plaque on your teeth, okay? So, getting at the root, again, if we don't diagnose, we've got to cut through the false beliefs, the heresy that the patient has bought into, because we're never going to get a change of behavior if somebody thinks this is genetic. So this is where education's important. Go ahead. So I tell the patient, if you have to drink soda, dark and diet, because at least the dark sodas, the colas, the darks are phosphoric acid, still not good. But the erosive one, the really erosive ones are the clear, like your 7-Up, Mountain Dew. Those are citric acid, very erosive. If it's the worst is the energy drinks, because people tend to sip on those all day. And at least the diet, I'm not going to get into health-wise of sugar alternative, but at least the body can't break down the alternative, the non-sugars to cause caries. Correct. So I won't speak to the health of the rest of the body, okay? I'll just speak for the mouth. Go ahead. Phosphoric acid in the like the dark soda, it's erosive. It's not as erosive as citric acid. So when you, the worst is when you have citric acid and sugar. So which is most of your energy drinks, Mountain Dew, Sprite. Those are really erosive. Oh, I think is that like acetic acid, a little more mild. But I mean, anything that has, because what's happening with plaque is the body is breaking down the bacteria it's breaking down sugar. The bacteria in the plaque is breaking down sugar to make acid, and that's what's causing the decay. So when you have sugar and acid, your body's going to make acid, and you're putting acid on the teeth. Okay, and this is what's causing most of your dental emergencies are just caries that has not been dealt with. Go ahead. Well, yeah, it could be natural. Yeah, I mean, at least like orange doesn't have the sugar. It's natural. I mean, it's got natural sugars. But yes, so anything that's got a pH below 5.5 can cause, you know, loss of tooth structure. So that's what they call critical pH. Yes. Yeah, smoking doesn't relate to tooth decay. Smoking is more of a concern for oral cancer. I was in the Army. Everybody drinks and smokes, but they're so young, you don't see a lot of oral cancer. The VA probably sees a lot of oral cancer. I've never worked in the VA, but it's smoking. It's the heat. The combination of the heat is that has an effect. So I'm not encouraging people to use smokeless tobacco, but I'm less concerned about smokeless tobacco causing oral cancer. The smoking is the combination of the heat, and if people drink and smoke for a long time, that's when you worry more about people getting oral cancer. But it's not a factor with caries. Smoking is a factor with periodontal disease because there's less circulation. So smokers, you'll see more bone loss in smokers, but not a factor in caries. Okay, good question. Go ahead. Beetle nut, yeah. Yeah, beetle nut, yes. So, yeah, if you, Papua New Guinea, everybody chooses beetle nut, yes. So, they put lime in it too. They put the red lime, yeah. So it's pretty common in like the Pacific Islands and East Asia. So it's just something to warn patients about, because it definitely implicated in oral cancer, you know, to put you at a higher risk. So, chewing tobacco, not as high risk of oral cancer. Smoking, yeah. Smoking and drinking together, you know. So just some questions that we want to ask the patient, okay? And a lot of times the patient is going to give you a lot of valuable information. And so this is what I want to ask. Well, you know, especially on a medical, if a patient shows up in a medical setting for a dental problem, most of the time they're legit, they've got a problem. And these are some questions you want to ask. You know, how long has this been bothering you? Okay, and what can you see? You know, the JDLR principle just doesn't look right. Okay, you know, it doesn't have to be a dentist to say, hey, something doesn't look right here, and then we'll talk about how to use Explorer and a mirror. And so, again, these are the questions. How long has this been bothering you? Has anything ever woken you up in the middle of the night, just start hurting out of nowhere? And, you know, does anything make it better or worse? And, you know, and then the other question, have you had any dental work done recently? That's a good question. You know, obviously, you're out in the middle of nowhere, probably not. But, you know, especially in the American context, it's possible they've had dental work done recently. So it's a good question. Okay, so again, you don't have to be a dentist. You look at this, these teeth are broken off of the gum line. Okay, you know, the question more here is, you know, obviously multiple, if they're coming in with an acute problem, like finding out, you know, if they come into a dental setting, we're going to hopefully take care of all those teeth at once. But if you're in an acute medical setting trying to figure out, well, which tooth is causing the problem right now, sometimes that can be, especially if you don't have dental imaging, you might have like a lateral Ceph capability in a hospital setting or like a Waters. But again, just looking for anything that just doesn't look normal. Okay, if it's bilateral, it's probably normal. If it's unilateral, then just doesn't look right. Then those are the questions we want to ask. Okay, so I'm going to demo this on the mannequin. Like I said, 2 years ago I did a live one, but can't really stress enough. And it's amazing to me how many dentists don't cold test, but really it's the key to good diagnosis, and it's really simple to do. So if you're going to have, a basic, none of these items cost very much. The can of Endo-Ice is about $20. And if you buy medical supplies through like Henry Schein, you can get it. But what you want to do, I don't use cotton tip applicators because they're too dense. I like it fluffy. Not so big that it's going to touch the naryngeal. I'm going to make a little ball. I'm not going to pack it. I'm just going to keep it loose and fluffy. And then I'm going to drop this microphone. But I'm going to spray it. I'll make it sizzle. I'll make it drip, okay? So I'm going to spray this. I'm going to make it drip, okay? And you're going to hear it. So I'm going to start. If the patient says that number 3-6 is causing the problem, usually tell them, put your finger on the tooth that's causing the problem. I'm going to go, if they have the same tooth on the opposite side, I'm going to cold test. I'm going to hold it on the cheek side. So I'm going to hold this down, and then I have them raise their hand when they feel cold. Okay, they're going to put their hand up. Once they put their hand up, I'm going to pull it away from the tooth. I'm going to wait to see how long. I'm not looking for how profound the response is. I'm looking for how long it takes the tooth to go back to normal. Okay, and I start with a tooth that hopefully doesn't have any issue, so we get a baseline. Now, if they're jumping out of the chair on every tooth, that's valuable information. Maybe they're a little hysterical. Okay, so you might not take them with a grain of salt. But, again, normal person. The other thing you have to be careful with cold testing, the older you get, the more calcified. I went from the Army to Florida. Most of my patients in the Army, when they're 20s, you cold test them, they all jump out of the chair. Moved to Florida. Most of my patients were 70, 80 years old. I was like, whoa, what just happened here? The cold testing, but you get the idea. Normal, so we're going to go to the neighboring tooth, to the one that they say. Okay, we're going to hold the cold, raise your hand. Okay, we're trying to see how long it takes to go back to normal. We're going to do the one in front of it, and then the last tooth we test is the one that they say is bothering them. That's where we're going to have them put your finger on the tooth that's bothering you. And so if I had my choice between imaging or cold testing, I would take cold testing because it's actually more valuable, and especially in a medical setting where you probably don't have the ability to take a PA, bite wing. This is $20, and anybody can do this. A lot of dentists don't do this, not because they don't have the training, just they're not taking the time to do it. But, again, a lot of valuable information here. The other test we can do is our percussion test. We're going to tap on the teeth. Take a mirror handle. Again, this is like $5, okay? Okay, so I'm going to tap. So I'm going to start. So if they said that 3-6 was the problem tooth, we're going to start with 4-6. We're just going to tap lightly. It doesn't have to be hard. It doesn't feel good, but it shouldn't be painful. Okay? And we're just trying to get an idea of what normal. And then we're going to tap on the tooth behind it. Then we're going to tap on the tooth in front. We're trying to get a baseline. Then we're going to tap on the tooth that they say is bothering them. Okay? And that's going to give us valuable information. We're going to talk more about what those things mean. The other thing you can do is can do like a cotton tip applicator, have them just bite on the tooth that they say is bothering them and see if it's painful. Make sure you're isolating that tooth and you're not biting on multiple teeth. But we also have the Explorer, and we'll talk about this. The Explorer, we always want to hold it perpendicular to the caries. Okay, we're going to use, in this case, I don't usually use this end, but the shepherd's staff end. We're going to hold it perpendicular to caries, and it's going to tell us the presence of caries and also the depth of the caries because we want to see where we're at in the caries progression diagram. Okay, so again, we're determining the presence of decay and how deep it is. How deep it is going to tell us information. Okay, and so sometimes students get confused. Sometimes to the untrained eye, this all looks the same. Okay, but on the left, we have an actual loss of tooth structure. Go ahead.
Sorry, are you going to get into what the expected response to cold testing is? I don't want to jump ahead.
Okay, so a normal cold response, they're going to feel it right away. And then it's going to go away right away. Okay? Sorry if I didn't. So that normally we expect, especially a young person, you put cold on a tooth, they're going to feel it right away. You pull the cold away, it should go back to normal right away. Okay, if it lingers, then that's, we're going to talk more about that, but that's when we suspect that we've got inflammation of the pulp. Go ahead.
Is that similar to when you eat cold food, should it feel the same?
Well, I guess what I would say is, so if I eat ice cream or something cold, like all my teeth are probably going to be, if I've had teeth that maybe had dental work done, that might be more, I'm going to talk about that. There is a difference what we call reversible pulpitis and irreversible pulpitis. But typically, if I have a bunch of untreated teeth, they're all going to, they might be sensitive to something cold, but it's going to be, you know, we're looking for something that stands out. Okay? And so it's a good question. And I hope that your questions will get answered in what I'm about to talk about. Okay? So when we're determining here, the one on the left is actual decay. If I put an Explore on that, it's going to stick into it. It's the two structures compromised, it's soft, and this we've actually lost tooth structure. Where on the right, we have an addition to the tooth. So if I take something metal, something sharp like if you have a periodontal scale, that's made for that. But even like a surgical curette, I can scrape this off and there should be healthy tooth structure underneath. Okay, so this is calculus. This is not, you know, yeah, ideally that gets cleaned off, but I'm much more concerned about this than I am about this. Okay, and so sometimes people get confused. That's why I use the Explorer. It's going to stick into this. It's going to be perpendicular. And I just lost my microphone. So the calculus is when plaque sits on the teeth long enough that it absorbs the ions from the saliva, so calcium and magnesium, and it hardens. And then it just, at that point, once it becomes calculus, you can't brush that off. It's got to be scaled off. Okay? So another way to look at it, so this is your question. Okay, so plaque, again, if it's just plaque, you can brush that off, you can floss that off, but if it stays that way for a long time, it's going to absorb the, especially at night when the saliva pools, this is where I usually see it, on the lower front teeth, on the lingual side of the lower front teeth, that's where you're most likely to see calculus. And so, again, that plaque sits long enough, then it absorbs the ions from the saliva and it hardens, and at that point it's going to have to be scaled off. And so plaque is soft, typically a white or a yellow color. Calculus can be a lot of different colors. It can be dark. It can be kind of a gold color. So a lot of different variants there. So, but again, we're just, again, either of these, this one can be scaled off, that can be brushed off. But these are not, you know, this is not the same as caries. Where caries, we've actually lost tooth structure. So, again, this is another analogy, a spiritual parallel, okay? It's like our sin is stuck on us, and it doesn't matter. Our good deeds can't get right. Okay, Acts 13. Through him, talking about Jesus, everyone who believes is set free from every sin, a justification you were not able to obtain under the law of Moses. Okay, a lot of people, you talk to them about calculus, like, oh, well, I'll start brushing harder. Like, well, brushing harder is not going to get that off. Okay, that's going to have to be scaled off. Okay, your good deeds, your efforts will not offset that, okay? And so, again, sometimes you'll see just staining. Again, unless you put an Explore on this, this is probably just staining. This is actually, see these pits here? There's probably actually caries here where it would stick with the Explore. This is just intrinsic stain, you know, not harmful. Maybe cosmetically doesn't look the way we want it to. We've talked about the tooth tapping, and again, we're just trying to get an idea of what normal, you know, again, if they're jumping out of the chair on every tooth, okay, then you got to kind of take that with a grain of salt. But normal, you know, just gently tap, shouldn't be painful and doesn't necessarily feel good. But talk about cold testing, we've gone through that. But this is, if you remember anything from today, please just understand this chart, okay? If you could forget every other slide, okay, this is really important to understand what's happening. Okay, and this is where we're using multiple things. If we have imaging, we'll use it. If we have cold testing, we've had Explore. We're also talking to the patient, getting information. So if we have caries strictly in the enamel, as in box number one, we're not going to have any symptoms. Okay, they're not going to notice that. Okay, in stage two, we've got caries into the dentin, and you see the pattern. This is a typical pattern because enamel is the hardest substance in the body. And dentin is less mineralized than enamel. And that's why if you don't deal with caries quickly, it starts spreading fast. And a lot of times what you see on the surface, you know, is just, you know, the tip of the iceberg. And so, unfortunately, underneath that is the dentin, and the decay is going to spread a lot faster in the dentin just because it's less mineralized, especially baby teeth. Baby teeth decay spread very fast because they're just, they're even less mineralized than adult teeth in the dentin. And so, in this case, the patient might have sensitivity to cold, they might have sensitivity to sweet. Anytime you have exposed dentin, whether that's through caries or you have the gum tissue has receded and the root is exposed, you can have sensitivity to cold or to sweet. But again, this is not that. This is sensitivity. This is not wake me up, I can't sleep at night, radiating pain. That's not what we're talking about. Stage two. The other thing can happen if they've had dental work done recently, especially like a large filling close to the pulp, especially in the first month, it's very likely to be sensitive, more sensitive. Okay, so again, this is where the cold testing is important. So if I cold test this tooth, it probably will be more sensitive to cold, but I'm not looking for how profound the cold response is. I'm looking for how long it takes to go back to normal. And in this case, this will go back to normal quickly, just like in stage one. Stage three is a different story. Stage three, the caries has entered the pulp. This is, and now the nerve is inflamed. This is what shows up at an ER. Okay, it's almost always misdiagnosed as infection. Okay, and what's happened here is the bacteria have entered the pulp. There's an increase in pressure inside the pulp, and there's a lot of pain. And this is when the patient says, it wakes me up at night, I can't sleep, I've got this radiating pain up by my ear. Okay, and that almost always gets diagnosed as infection. That's not infection. This is why your cold testing is important. If I cold test this tooth, this one is not going to go back to normal quickly. It's going to be different. Okay, this is where the patient raises their hand. I did one last Saturday. I cold tested a lady, and she started crying. Okay, I'm not trying to punish, but I do need to diagnose, and I need to figure out what's going on. And again, we're comparing. This is why the comparison of other teeth. This is what we want to see. You know, is this going back to normal quickly, or is this like, you know, this is where. Okay, this is what gets the patient at the ER. Okay, and then in stage four, what are the symptoms in stage four? What's that? It's actually less symptomatic because what happened in stage four? Okay, so here's what happens. Okay, I'm going to tell you this. Anecdotally, 95% of the patients I see on antibiotics should not be on antibiotics. Okay, so what happens is they go to the ER, and sometimes they go to a dental office, and they radiating pain, they get, you know, no cold testing, misdiagnosis infection, they give an antibiotic, and then eventually the pain goes away. The antibiotics cured my pain. It's like, no, your pulp died. Okay, again, it's this, I sprained my ankle, I drink Pepsi, my sprained ankle gets better, it must have been the Pepsi that cured my sprained ankle, right? This is what's happening. Okay, it's very hard for the patient to unbelieve what they've been told. Okay, they get told they have an infection, then it stops hurting. They take the antibiotic and it stops hurting. It's really hard to convince the ER physician and the patient that that's not actually what happened. Okay, and this is where we're worried about infection, because now the bacteria have taken over the pulp. This is the stage we have to worry about infection, even though it doesn't hurt nearly as bad. Usually here, the pain stops. It may hurt when they bite on it, but usually they're not going to have the radiating, can't sleep at night pain. Go ahead.
Are you
going to
talk about kind of telling the difference between infection and this at some point? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Okay, so again, this is where we have to educate the patient. We have to explain to them, well, actually, no, you didn't have an infection, because this is what they think. They think they had an infection. They think the antibiotic cured their infection. Now they think they're good to go. Well, actually, no, you just have a time bomb tooth here. A lot of times at stage four, it's a hard sell to get some patients to do anything about it. Okay, stage three is not a hard sell, right? They're radiating pain. They can't sleep at night. That is not a hard sell to convince them they need to do something. Okay? What's that?
Can you become septic from...
Well, stage five, if stage four is very localized. Usually what happens at stage four, the tooth is going to hurt to tap on it because the bacteria have gone from inside the pulp to the ligament space.
And so this stage here, most of the patients are not symptomatic. They'll say it hurts when I bite on it, okay? But they're usually not complaining about a lot of pain because, again, the nerve has died. And so what happens here, if this does not go, if this does not get dealt with, it can become, you know, again, if it's localized, you know, even acute apical abscess, what we don't want is a space infection or a multi-space infection. And, you know, in some, I know some of our mission hospitals, like some places you've probably been to, Elwha, Gulmi, and Niger, like they see Ludwig's angina from dental related on a regular basis. And I typically, hopefully not seen in the U.S., but again, if you don't, if this doesn't get dealt with, this is where you have to educate the patient because a lot of the patients don't want to do anything. They're not in pain anymore. You have to explain to them, this tooth is just a time bomb. And if you don't deal with this necrotic tooth, a lot easier to deal with it here than, you know, when, you know, it's really sad when we're taking golden OR time to deal with a dental problem that could have been dealt with a long time ago. Go ahead. So you should put them on an anti-inflammatory, and they need to get dental treatment. So at this stage, they need root canal therapy, but it needs to be extracted. So, but yeah, you do.
You need an anti-inflammatory
is going to deal with the source of the pain because that's what's causing the pain.
So you could,
you do, yeah, Motrin. I mean, if you and I mean, if they don't have any other contraindication, you could do a steroid if you really want. But the anti-inflammatory is going to be your first choice. But again, this is where, again, if they're in this stage, you probably don't have to convince them to get treatment, but finding somebody that, kind of knowing your local assets, whether that's here domestically, sadly, I see a lot of people, we'll talk about this, that don't, you know, they don't want to treat, they, you know, again, gets misdiagnosed as infection. We'll talk about this in the later slides. Okay. Really can't think of a better spiritual analogy of James 1. Okay, evil desire gives birth to sin. Sin is full grown, gives birth to death. Okay, that's exactly what we're seeing. You know, use this analogy many times. Okay, what's happening in your tooth is the same thing that's happening in our soul, right? We're, you know, we've the sins of omission, the sins of commission. We are, you know, we're dead in our sins. You know, that's that necrotic tooth. Okay, and so just the terms that I don't like because they're hardly ever used correctly. Okay, abscess. I hear the word infection or abscess and anything related to dental, my ears start burning. So I would just avoid these terms because they are not very seldom used correctly. And a lot of times, I see it in dentistry, the word infection is used to scare and to sell dentistry, okay? And again, obviously if somebody comes in and they're stage four, you need to educate them, they need to get this dealt with. But we want to be careful what we tell patients, making sure we're giving factual, that we understand really what's happening. Okay, so I'm not going to go into these. This is, I got to keep moving, 23 minutes here. Okay, but we've really kind of talked through this. Okay, again, not going to have any symptoms, kind of gone through these progression. And, you know, once it gets into the pulp, we have to do root canal therapy, we have to extract. Okay, and if they either don't have the local resources to do root canal therapy, or they don't have the funds, you just need to get the tooth out. Okay? So these are just some random photos, but acute apical abscess, very isolated. Okay? It needs to be dealt with. At least it's very localized. But we're going to, again, if you're in a medical setting, you need to IND that. We'll talk about that. Once we start getting to a space infection, not as concerning here, buccal space, but once here we've got buccal space and the submandibular space, and that's where once we've got multiple space infection, we've got to get more concerned and the more aggressive, you know, all these can be treated same day. Okay, that's if you hear anything else from me today, make sure, you know, same day treatment. And so we're going to talk about just some of the myths that are out there. Okay, we talked about this with stage 3. Anybody who's in pain must be infected, and usually if they're showing up at an ER setting, it's stage 3. It's inflammation. Misdiagnosed as infection. And so, and then we talk about this, because of this, you know, it took the antibiotic, pain stopped. I can kind of diagnose over the phone when the patient says, 4 months ago, this tooth was killing me. And then it stopped. It doesn't hurt so much. It hurts when I bite on it. It's like, I know exactly what happened. Okay? So, let the patient tell you. Just ask some good questions. Let them lead you to the diagnosis. Okay, so we've talked about this. Okay, there's just a lot of things that aren't infection that get called infection. Okay, so toothache, that's that stage 3. The technical term is irreversible pulpitis.
Okay, now, the other question is if you had dental work done recently, if they've had a lower molar extracted in the last week, we suspect dry socket, okay? If it's dry socket, they need to go back to whoever did the extraction. It's very easy to treat. Flush out the socket, pack it with Eugenol and some sort of carrier. Usually within 10 minutes, they'll be out of pain, okay? But if you give them antibiotics, it's not going to help them. They're just going to be, they're going to stay miserable. I mean, it goes away, but it's miserable. And again, this is the other question. Have they had dental work done recently? Well, if you took out a lower tooth, especially if it's a difficult extraction, we're going to see normal just postoperative edema. That isn't, you know, we need to have other objective signs that they have infection before we just look at edema and say that's infection. Okay, and so again, trismus, if they've not had any work done and they're, you know, trismus, that would be a sign that they have infection. If it's recent work in the last week, that could just be your normal postoperative, you know, normal complications. Okay. This is what we should see if it's true infection, one or more of these things. Okay, so pus, again, not trismus, it's related to recent treatment. Fever, you know, the younger you are, the more reliable that if you're fighting a true infection, the body is going to, you're going to see fever. Just malaise, that's that, you know, miserable. Okay, so these are four myths. I hear these all the time. I hear these from patients who've been to dental offices. I hear these from patients who've been to the ER. We're going to go through these, okay? And there's really nothing that you definitively treat in dentistry with antibiotics. Might be an adjunct to definitive care, but, and the challenge is, even if you give, you know, this is why it's dangerous. Somebody shows up here or here and you give them oral antibiotic and tell them to come back in a week. It's very dangerous because you've not created drainage. And you're, especially an oral antibiotic, the ability to penetrate that, it's just dangerous to do that, okay? And so, again, even if you give antibiotics, it doesn't guarantee it's going to get better. You've got to get rid of the source. Medical side, source control, I think that's the buzzword. And again, this is from the oral surgery literature. Okay, it does not reliably prevent the worsening of the infection, right? Especially an oral antibiotic. We need to get rid of the source. So, and this is the biofilm effect. So, you know, we started at stage four, but this has gone a long time. We've got this, and a lot of times, you know, we've got this what started very mild, now it's turned into a space infection. We've got this biofilm effect, and especially an oral antibiotic's ability to penetrate that area. So we really need to get in there and get drainage. Okay? Here's another one. Okay? If you give anesthetic, it's going to cause it to spread. And, you know, no, it's not, we don't necessarily inject into the infection just because it's uncomfortable if we can avoid injecting it right in the area. But again, you got to get the patient numb to get the work done. So, and again, this is a widely held belief. You know, I talk about, well, the Henderson-Hasselbalch equation, and it's acidic, anesthetic won't work, but really some of the data in the last, comes out of Japan in the last 20 years, really undermining this long-held belief that anesthetic won't work in the presence of infection. And so this is another one, you know, that you won't be able to get the patient numb. And so, again, this goes back to our chart. Stage three. Somebody comes in with a lower molar in stage three, that is very well documented. Those are hard teeth to get numb. But again, that's not infection. That's inflammation of the pulp. And again, I find that teeth that are truly causing infection, they're some of the easiest teeth to remove because the ligament around the tooth is inflamed. You know, so they're really easy to take out. Somebody's just gotta be willing to get in there and get it done. And so, again, this is really this age-old belief, this old pH theory is really being challenged by some of the literature coming out in the last 20 years. And then the argument they make is, if this is true, if it's the presence of, you know, pus and acidity, this, why would we struggle getting somebody numb on the lower? Because at the lower, we're giving the injection at the ramus. The infection is at, you know, at the apices. And so if this is true, we'd expect it to be hard to get people numb on top. And that's not what we find. And so they're really challenging this view. And, again, an unproven theory. Okay, it's from 1936. So, and again, treatment will cause it to spread. Well, it's actually the exact opposite. Okay, we want to get the tooth out. We want to get drainage. And we don't need to wait. We don't need to wait a week. Okay, again, we're just wasting time. This is actually dangerous. Okay, and so find somebody that, you know, sadly, I hear physicians say, well, all the local dentists tell me this. They can't treat them. And, and it's sad that that's really not true. Okay, so find somebody, that will treat these people, because we're just it's again, and they talk about here, the sooner you get this tooth out and get it draining, the less likely that this is going to spread, less likely going to end up in the OR, extra oral IND, hospitalization. And so, again, we want to take these teeth out as soon as possible. I don't expect medical people to be taking out teeth, but at least an IND, and we'll talk about that. Okay, so, again, I don't expect medical providers to be doing extractions. I mean, if you're in a place where you're allowed to do that, go for it. But we, at least an IND, okay, and really no different than what physicians do other parts of the body. Okay? And so why do we want an IND? Well, we're going to drain the pus. We're going to decrease the bacterial load. We're going to improve the local blood supply. So if we do give antibiotics, we're going to get better blood flow to the area where we can actually help with this infection. And we're going to keep it from going somewhere deeper where we don't want it to go. And even if we don't get pus, these are typically largely anaerobic. They've been longstanding. Okay, we're changing the environment here by opening this up. Okay, so I got to keep moving here. But again, a lot of these antithrombotics, you don't take patients off antithrombotics to do dental work. Okay, so a lot of these things are. I've heard all these excuses. Patients come from other places. Well, they said they couldn't treat me. Very rare. They're very rare. True contraindications to dental treatment. Go ahead. Always. Don't use plain anesthetic. So, unfortunately, like where I lived in Florida, there are a lot of these OBGYNs. I think they thought we were given like an EpiPen, okay? So, it's a lot safer to give epinephrine in the plain anesthetic is a lot, it's just, it doesn't work as well. And if you don't have good pain control, the body's going to produce its own epinephrine. And so, it also slows down the rate at which the anesthetic is. Right. It's the fight or flight. Correct? So again, dental anesthetic is 1 to 100,000. They even make, there's some formulations that are 1 to 200,000. But we want to slow down the rate at which the anesthetic is reabsorbed in the bloodstream. And we also want it to work better. Because if we don't have profound anesthesia, the patient, they're going to produce their own epinephrine. So I always would push back with the OBGYN would say that. And I would have a conversation with the patient. I said, because the only pregnancy B local anesthetics are prilocaine and lidocaine. And lidocaine, you guys have plain lidocaine on the medical side, and if you want to use plain, that's. But I want the epinephrine. This is going to work better, it's safer too. So I'm not going to go into this. You'll have this if you're in some place. In the U.S. we use these carpules, but overseas they're either hard to find or they're kind of expensive. You can mix it yourself. Been able to find epinephrine and 2% lidocaine in almost every country I've traveled to. But no, you mean like a?
Well, I don't know if I was teacher or if it was when I took the course, but one of the students had a bad trip like that.
Okay. I don't know if anybody that's trying to give. I mean, there's IV sedation, but not like I don't know if anybody's given local. It's almost tell me about that. I don't know what. Yeah, sorry, I don't know anything about. Okay, so again, we're gonna go back to our diagnosis. We're gonna try to find again. Have patient put your finger on the tooth that you think is causing the problem. Not always gonna be right, but that's gonna give us a place to start. Okay, we're going to give anesthetic. We talked about we can go on either side. So we can go on either side. It's not going to hurt to put it right in the swelling, but it's typically more comfortable to avoid that. So in this case, we're going to go mesial and distal to the swelling, and this is very mild. Typically, in the upper facial, there's really no danger zones. You just take the 15 blade, and you don't even have to do a blunt dissection because of where you're at. You just bury it to the bone, and then you might, if you need to, you open it up with a hemostat. You can do a Penrose drain. I don't usually do the Penrose drain because I'm taking the tooth out at the same time, but I'm not expecting medical people. You can do this. You can take a cut off part of a glove, Just use a silk suture. Just keep it open, allow it to drain until they can get definitive dental care. But this is real simple. This is, I mean, especially for medical people who do this stuff in other parts of the body. So where you want to be careful of is the lower premolar area, like the 4-5 area, because you have the mental nerve exits the jaw. That's where you want to be careful. That's, if you did that, you'd do it very superficial. And then you can do blunt dissection, just kind of gently open it up. Most other places in the mouth, in the palate, in the posterior, you know, potentially you could damage the greater palatine. But palatal swelling is pretty rare. Usually the path of least resistance is the buccal. But again, if you're concerned, you can always do this more like the blunt dissection. And you guys know how to do this.
Do you put your lidocaine right into the abdomen?
You can. I mean, in this case, you don't have to. Again, if I'm not taking the tooth, if I'm a medical provider and I'm not taking the tooth out, I don't have to have very profound anesthesia. All I'm doing is doing a soft tissue incision. So if I'm taking the tooth out, I've got to have more profound anesthesia. But I would, in this case, probably give mesial and distal to the swelling. And you're just going to put your 15 blade in there. And, you know, the thing is, too, it's like you want to try to get the patient as comfortable as you can. But, you know, sometimes you got to tell the patient, hey, we're trying to get you taken care of here. Bear with me here. You know, we're going to try to get you as numb and as comfortable as we can. But, you know, we got to get this dealt with. Go ahead.
For incising and draining,
you could do a topical gel first. I mean, you could put, like, I mean, yeah, we don't usually, in dentistry, we usually use benzocaine. But, yeah, whatever, you could put something on that first before you inject. Sure. Absolutely. Not gonna hurt. Yeah, if you got it, use it. Yeah. So the only time you would see this is at stage 5. Okay, so stage 5 early on would be acute apical abscess. We'll go back to that. Sorry, I've got a lot of slides to get through. I skipped all the local. You'll have them. Sorry, I'm going to skip back. Okay, so stage 5, it's a little elusive, but So stage 5, we've eroded through the bone, in this case on the cheek side, but it's very localized. Okay? This case, we've got a wider area. We've got the buccal space. This one, we've got multiple spaces. And again, all of these need definitive care, immediate definitive care. But, you know, you got to be more serious and more aggressive, you know, especially when you're in a multi-space, especially when you're worried about the airway. Okay? Go ahead.
What if you don't have a drain?
IND, anybody can do a drain. You just cut a finger off a glove. Yeah, I mean, I saw some people do a Penrose drain. I mean, they make these, like, drains, but I've never had them. So you can just, like, dentistry, use like a rubber dam, or you can cut a finger off a glove. It's not, all it is keeping it open so it can continue to drain. Because you need to keep it open until you get rid of the source. Now, I don't usually do these because I'm taking a tooth out and it's going to drain through the extraction site. But if I'm in a medical setting, like both of you are, then that's we're going to keep a drain in there. I've got 5 minutes, right? Wait, I saw my sign. And we're almost done here. And I'll be around if anybody has questions at the end. Okay, so this is the ADA algorithm that was published in 2019. None of this information was new. It's just nobody was following it. The endodontists have been saying this stuff for years. Finally, the ADA published it. And this is there's one for medical setting and one for the dental setting. Because of where we are, this is the medical one. Okay? So, again, it's going to go back to your cold testing. If it's vital, we know that's not infection. We don't give antibiotics. Okay? If it's necrotic, this would be like your stage 4, early stage 5. Again, it's necrotic. We don't give antibiotics. We give antibiotics when we have visible swelling. Okay? Not the patient thinks it's swollen, but you objectively see swelling. Okay? And in a medical setting, you would give antibiotics there. Okay? In a dental setting, you're going to give definitive treatment. Okay? But this is the case where you would do an IND and you would give antibiotics. Good question. Typically, I try to stay away from Clinda just because black box, you have the C. diff implications. And usually, I usually, technically penicillin VK is the narrowest spectrum, but the compliance is better. So I usually stay away from penicillin because 4 times a day versus 3 times a day. Or a lot of times I give the 875 amoxicillin, which is twice a day, going to even have a higher compliance. But if it's not
resolving, it's much more likely you didn't get the source than it is the antibiotic not working. So if this isn't, if we're not responding to amoxicillin, you can add metronidazole. But again, it needs to go to a, it needs to get referred if they're not responding. Okay, and in the medical side, we're assuming you didn't do definitive care, so they need to get. Go ahead. You can. I mean, that's a big gun. I mean, yeah, you can. I mean, most of the time you don't need. You know, I mean, most of the time you're going to get what you need with amoxicillin. Amoxicillin got a little bit of anaerobic coverage. I mean, Augmentin is, that's like in dentistry, that's like the biggest, you know, the widest spectrum antibiotic you would give, but it's not, you know, not too often. Well, most of these cases, I mean, like, a lot of these cases I bet would resolve even without the antibiotics if I'm getting rid of the source. You know, I wouldn't jump to Augmentin. I would start with amoxicillin, you know, worry about compliance. Like, 875 is probably the best in terms of twice-a-day compliance. And then if they truly are, you know, they have a true allergy, then azithromycin is going to be your choice. You know, clindamycin just fallen out of favor. We got 3 minutes, don't I? Okay. So this chart will be in your, I broke it in half because there's a lot for one slide. Okay, so anytime we have systemic involvement, you know, acute epilepsis or greater and they're medically compromised, okay, if it's a, so these are when you would give antibiotics, okay, again, if the tooth is avulsed, an adult tooth is avulsed and you're putting it back in, that's technically like a foreign body, so that's when you would give antibiotics, and this is the AAE guidelines, these will be, and it doesn't matter if it's completely closed or partially closed apex. If it's a young child and the tooth is not completely formed, it doesn't matter. You give antibiotics. Okay, and then, again, if we're seeing these more systemic signs, we've got fever over 101, we've got trismus, we're going to use antibiotics. And again, a lot of these things that really aren't infection that are getting misdiagnosed. Irreversible pulpitis, that's at stage 3. Okay, and again, stage number 4, if it's just a necrotic pulp. If it has a sinus tract, sometimes you'll see those where it's draining. It's not as concerning because it has a place to drain. You don't give antibiotics for that. It still needs treatment, but it's okay. And then, again, some of these things, we talked about these where, you know, sometimes we're, you know, dry socket, that's not an infection. You know, toothache, that's stage 3. Okay, so if you're in a foreign country setting and you're seeing a lot of dental needs, these are a couple groups. I've worked with both of them. They do dental training for nationals. I hate to see OR time at like Galmi and Elwha being used to manage these. You can train a local person how to do extractions. Keep this stuff out of the ER. Keep your OR. Keep your OR doing things that only can be done in the OR, not dental problems. Okay. And yes, it's 3:29. Okay. I will be here. If you got any questions, I'll be here. I'll be down at the CMDA booth. You can talk to me now, or I'll be down at the CMDA booth most of the weekend. Thanks for your attention.
Thank you.